I'm very happy to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Pam Wiseman. She's executive director of the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mayor Charlotte. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. Now, you guys are doing work whose goal is to put yourselves out of business, essentially, which is to stop the cycle of violence and abuse. And that's a very big job.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should bring that up. We are planning to change our mission statement, which currently says something like that, to end violence and oppression, because clearly this is not something we can do by ourselves, right? In a culture that rewards and promotes violence and abuse, where bullies make lots of money and people who don't care about other people are the heroes and the stars, it's really hard for people like us to make much of a difference. I used to work with violent men. I did that for 12 years in counseling groups. And, you know, one of my colleagues once said to me, "Pam, we'd like you to start collecting some data about your work with abusive men. We want to know that people coming out are less violent than they were when they went in," which is quite legitimate, except that it depends on so many factors. What's the criminal justice system like? What is the culture like? What is the environment like? Right? So here I am in a basement classroom with a raggedy piece of chalk ending violence, right?
Right.
It's absurd. And the same is true all over New Mexico. We have, you know, about 30 programs with people making $7 or $8 an hour who are carrying on their backs, really, this burden of needing to end violence. So it's a much bigger effort. We've been in it by ourselves for too long.
Well, and it's a country founded on violence with a long history of slavery, with a long history of displacing and killing Native people, and with laws that are all about
justifying
justifying that, and having guns is not only a legitimate thing, but a wonderful thing.
Right. It's a good thing to be able to stand up for yourself and pull yourself up by the bootstraps and all of these messages that we hear, which really run counter to what we know is needed to create a society where there's less violence.
So we can talk from now until the end of next week about the roots of violence, and we probably should, but we have a limited time.
Well, we don't have time for that, right?
On the Radio Cafe. But there are some very interesting programs that you're doing, and one of them is a conference called Message Matters: How to Talk About Violence and Abuse So That People Listen.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Well, it's the first one of its kind ever. So it's a national conference. We have 16 states, and at this point, I believe 3 countries who are planning to be in Albuquerque in March for this. We've lined up nationally renowned speakers. And the point is that for many, many years, we took for granted that people were supportive of our work. And now we're finding that funders are looking elsewhere. We're not reaching victims. In fact, 70% of victims of domestic violence never contact anyone for help, and that is, I think, in part because we don't speak about it in a way that resonates for them. So we thought, wouldn't it be a good idea to get together for the first time ever and to have a conversation about what we need to do going forward? How can we talk about this issue so that people are moved to care about it?
And so on that subject, how you can talk about it so that people care about it, what have you come up with so far? I mean, is it a matter of the words you choose?
It's lots of stuff. It certainly is the words that we choose. You know, we talk to each other mostly. You know, I used to run a domestic violence agency, and I'd be invited to speak to what we know of as the animal groups, right? The elk, the moose, the lions club. And if you were to go in and talk about what you saw as the real roots of, you know, domestic violence, oppression and the social construction of masculinity, they'd look at you like you had 3 heads, and someone would raise their hand and say, "Domestic violence is caused by drinking, right?" I mean, people just don't understand the issue, and we haven't done very much to counter that. Worse, we have now some very powerful and influential detractors, people who are seeking at the federal level and also globally to undermine domestic violence work.
What's in it for them?
Well,
who are these people?
It's they're they're stealth groups. They have innocuous sounding names, like many of these kinds of groups do. The Center for, for example, if you were to Google domestic violence research, you would come up with two websites that would always show up at the top, and they're really about proving that domestic violence is not a problem that is for women, that women are just as violent as men, and that there are all kinds of false accusations that women make about domestic violence. And sometimes those in other states have resulted in legislation that would make the false reporting of domestic violence, for example, into a felony. So it's actually a very organized, well-funded organization. It's been working sort of behind the shadows now for about 15, 20, 25 years.
And who are these people? I mean, what's in it for them? I mean, you can see, fossil fuel companies want to obfuscate climate change research so that they can drill with impunity. But what's it? I mean, is this made up of actual abusers who want to keep abusing?
I'm sure in part. And I think also it's because I heard one of these people say, domestic violence is the linchpin of feminism. You take that away and you don't have anything. So it's part of a larger sort of ultra-conservative movement, right? And as long as women are victims and have sympathy and can have laws that are helpful to them, I think the sense is that that's less power for them. So I think it's an ideology more than anything.
And an ideology that probably goes hand in hand with gun ownership, anti-feminism, what else?
It's one and the same, right. Yeah. Right. Environmental issues. It's essentially a right-wing agenda, and these groups are a part of it. And they've concealed themselves so that they sound very reasonable. And for years, we thought that we should say nothing about it, right? We'd be better off just to keep our mouths shut.
Which sounds, that's what women have been doing all along,
exactly,
is keeping our mouths shut.
Right. And we know those are not the appropriate actions, right? It's better to get your story out first. And if you can't do that, then you have to be clear about who is giving these kinds of messages and for what reasons. And we did neither of those things.
So then, again, on this question of messaging, I mean, you can't go out into regular society and talk about the social construction of masculinity,
right,
and some of these other things that you were mentioning. But these are, I think I understand what you're saying when you say that phrase, but how can you talk about that in a way that people do understand it?
Yeah, well, that's the million-dollar question, right? And that's what we're here, I think, to discuss. For example, we often go into funding hearings and we say things like, well, we provided 625 hours of this service or that service, right, and people are falling asleep. We haven't learned how to talk about our values and the importance of treating people well, the importance of equality. We just haven't found those phrases. But for example, one of the people who will be speaking, her name is Susan Strong, and she runs something called, I think it's called the Metamorphosis Project. I hope I said that correctly. And she has a whole sort of program on how to speak American, how to talk to mainstream America about issues. And so she'll be doing quite a bit of work with us at this conference, along with lots of other people who've done some polling and tried to determine what moves people. So we're just at the beginning of this. We have never done this.
It's interesting because the conservative movement in the United States has done a lot of that. There's been a tremendous focus on language and on quote-unquote values, as if conservative values were the only values.
That's right.
And
that's right.
What you might call liberal or progressive or leftist or women's or the values of that whole coalition, that it loosely is correlated with the Democratic Party, tries to, as you say, talk about facts and numbers as if that were going to move anybody.
And we know that it doesn't,
yeah,
right? Facts do not persuade, and that's what we have mostly done. Some of these men's groups have for years been saying to us, now you know that women are just as violent as men, right? And they haul out a couple of studies to purportedly to demonstrate that. And they say to us, so do you serve men too? And our answer has always been, oh yes, we serve men too. That was our sort of sole response, because we don't want to offend people. We want to get along with people. We don't want our funding to be jeopardized. So we've really allowed this kind of narrative to grow and develop without any counter from us at all.
We're talking to Pam Wiseman of the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence about the upcoming conference, Message Matters, How to Talk About Violence and Abuse, so that people listen. And I would imagine that in that is not only the words you use, but the stories you tell.
It's all about the story, right? It's what it's like. People want to know, what caused this problem, right? What's this about? Who are the heroes and who are the villains? What's the moral? What are the lessons that we can learn? And we have not been very good at that.
You know, there's another piece to that which I think complicates it, which is that stories with heroes and villains tend to foster a kind of black and white thinking.
That's absolutely right.
Which usually isn't really true to the reality.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, who was I? Somebody, I was talking to... Oh, I know, it was this a person who works at the penitentiary, and I was asking her about forgiveness, and she said most of the people who are inmates, their main challenge is to forgive the people who abused them.
Yeah. Yes.
So if you construct them as villains, you don't see the whole picture.
I could say a couple of things about that. Maybe we can talk about that in more detail another time. But that's also part of kind of the gendered nature of the issue, right? That women are supposed to forgive. When I worked with men who were violent, that was a common refrain. Why doesn't she just forget about it, right? Because if she forgets about it, then that lessens their accountability and the need for change. And so that's why. But when I was thinking about stories... I was reading a book by a man named Drew Weston, who wrote about emotions and their role in political campaigns. And he cites a story in there that I know is really familiar to lots of people. And it's about a little train, right, full of there's a train full of toys, right, that is unable to make it up a hill. And all these big, powerful trains come by. They're sleek and metal and fast and don't want to help the toys that are in this train. Then the little blue train, right, who has one tiny little engine, small, not very powerful, is the only one to stop and help. And because this little train, you'll know, and I'm sure you know what story I'm talking about, thinks that she can get up the hill. In fact, she does. And she saves the toys, right? And so that's a story. The villain, I guess, is indifference and not caring about your neighbors and your friends. And the hero is the train who tries against all odds to make it up the hill. And that's sort of how I see the work that we do. We're small. We're not powerful, we don't have any money, but we have persistence. And there's a moral there, right? That's the story of the work we do. I'm not suggesting that you go to the Lions Club and tell the story of the little train that could, or little engine that could, because then they would look at you like you were crazy. But that's the point, right? That resonates with people, those kinds of stories with morals and values. We need to learn how to tell them.
So you are doing that conference. Now, who's that conference for? If people are listening who would like to attend, is it open to the general public? Is it for people who are working in service positions?
It is for the main audience, of course, will be domestic violence professionals, and they're coming from all over the country and from other countries as well, but also stakeholders and allied organizations, people who care about the issue and want to help. We have animal protection. We have a number of men's groups. We have the national coalitions and resource centers. We have funders, the United Way. We have LGBT groups. So there are lots of people who are coming. And so we welcome anyone who's interested.
You're also doing a project with Animal Protection New Mexico.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
We are. Yes. Well, we were, the legislature provided us with $50,000 in funding to provide shelter for pets of victims of domestic violence. And the reason that's important is because 71% of victims who come into shelters report that batterers threatened their animals. In cases where the animals were abused, 76% of the time it happened in front of children. And 65% of victims said they either delayed leaving an abusive situation or never left at all out of concern for their animals. So this is something we need to really to fix.
And of course, people who abuse animals are more likely to abuse people.
They're absolutely connected, yes, because animals are lack power and the ability to say no. I heard a story, I won't repeat it, but it was several years ago now. It was an incident that happened in Aztec, New Mexico, where a father did something to the children's animal. And I, 2 years from hearing about it, am still traumatized. Sometimes I still think about it, and it upsets me. And if I can't get over this as an adult who didn't see it, imagine what it must have been like, right, for a child whose pet it was, right? And so I'm angry about that, I'm sad about it, and I want to do something to make sure it happens much less often.
Do people who go into the line of work that you're in, doing domestic violence work, doing therapy and so on, are they people who tend to be survivors themselves?
Yes. In fact, that's one of the things that our Coalition Against Domestic Violence, is working on. It's organizational development and help for programs. In fact, organizations often come to look like their causes, right? And so that's something that it's a risk for us. Most people in this field, like many other fields, mental health and so on, have experience in domestic violence. So they come to it with that sort of level of trauma. If they don't come to it with that level of trauma, they get it quickly, because we know the exposure to those people's stories over and over has the same effects on the people who are working in the field as if trauma had happened directly to them. So what we have are a field full of traumatized people, right, who are trying to do the biggest job imaginable, which is to end violence, right, and with not very much support. So we try to offer that.
And they also fall into some of the, I mean, just from listening to you talk today, some of the traps that abused women fall into, which is forgiving too quickly,
yeah,
taking care of everybody else, being polite and staying quiet.
Right. That's right. And I think, I mean, that's an interesting connection that you're making, which is that we're behaving in some ways, if I might be blunt about it, like someone who had been victimized might behave, which is out of fear, right? Not wanting to offend, not wanting to lose anything. And I think those with counter stories to tell are not so afraid, because they're in general more powerful, they have more privilege. And so we've stifled our own voices. And I think that's something that has to change.
Now, you're also doing a children's project. By the way, we're talking to Pam Wiseman of the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Tell us about that.
So, as you can well imagine, children suffer enormously from exposure to domestic violence. And there are lots of studies about the effects of this that range from failure to complete school, depression, illness, diabetes. The list goes on and on. There are very serious consequences for children who are exposed to violence. Yet in New Mexico, we've never had the money to provide the services that we know will work to prevent those terrible outcomes. So we were able this year, with the assistance of Children, Youth, and Families Department, to get $350,000 into the budget to begin piloting some programs working with children using evidence-based models in seven different areas around the state. And if it works, as I think it will, to really help these children, then I hope it will be not only continued but expanded in subsequent years, so that every domestic violence agency has at least one or more people who are trained to work with children.
When we talk about domestic violence, are we talking 99% of male violence against females? What are we talking about?
That's an interesting question. Again, it depends on who you ask, right? But I think we know that most violence in relationships is perpetrated by men against women. Certainly most of the injuries are from women. Now, there's a study called the conflict tactics scale by a researcher named Strauss that people use all the time. And in this study, he found that women were slapping men, and they were, you know what I mean? It was sort of mutual. These studies were done on college students. And, you know, that's probably the case, right? But we're talking about severe, serious violence where people are stalked and killed and tortured. And that tends to be men against women. And there really isn't much of an argument, I don't think, that can be made for anything else.
And people will trot out the one case of a woman who shot her abusive boyfriend,
right,
or something like that. But
right,
if you look at actually who's right in jail for shooting whom, those are the exceptions.
Exactly. Right. I think somehow we must have led people to think that we want to say that women are good and men are bad. And that's really not the case at all, right? But there are different cultures in which men and women live. Right, and men do tend to live in a culture that's more violent and that uses force more often and that is more appreciative, I guess, of the use of power and control.
Well, and they're also biologically wired to use force more than we are. We just have different functions biologically.
Yeah, and they're stronger, right? I mean, so I think it's time to get out of that fight about who's more violent. That's childish, I think, in many ways,
yeah,
to have that conversation and start looking at what kind of a society or a culture we can create that makes it less likely for that to happen.
Now, do you look at cultures, either subcultures within the United States or beyond our borders, that are less violent and kind of use them as models?
We haven't really. I think that we could and should. I mean, there are, in some cultures, women are valued much less, right? In some cultures, women aren't allowed to drive cars, right? In some cultures, if a woman is raped or assaulted, she has to produce 5 male witnesses, right, that will say that happened. And if she can't do that, then she's stoned to death, right? To me, that's not, it's different in the impact, but the intention to me is not so different than what we have here in this country, which is the desire to make it a felony for a woman to report domestic violence when it can't be proved, right? It's a way to make people be quiet, to deter reporting, to take it out of the realm of the criminal justice system, and for women to have then less power. So to me, the impulses are the same.
I have to say, one of the things that has always, I mean, once I sort of thought about it, that I find a little irritating is that sentence, "Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned." I mean, all of us have scorned and been scorned probably at different times in our lives. And, you know, women scorn sometimes do terrible things. Mostly they talk to their friends ad nauseum. But who are the stalkers? Who are the rejected people who then make another person's life miserable for the next year until they're apprehended by the cops?
Exactly. In fact, the most dangerous time for a victim of domestic violence is when she's leaving for precisely that reason, right? When women leave whether the person feels abandoned or is just angry about the loss of control, that's the dangerous time, right? That's the fury and the danger.
So you guys talk about having not a whole lot of power and working on very low funds, but you actually are making a difference in the lives of a lot of people here in New Mexico.
I hope so, right? I mean, that's what we aim to do, and it has to happen, I guess, a little at a time, you know. My Native American friends, who we work with quite a lot and who we're going to be doing some, I think, projects with, have a story, you've probably heard it, about the healing forest. Do you know, have you heard that about?
No.
In this story, right, it's really about, I think, substance abuse, but it applies. In this forest, there are trees that have become unhealthy. So several of the trees decide to go away for 30 days and get counseling and treatment, right? And they get nice clean water while they're there and sunshine and fertilizer, and they come back and they feel great, and they go back to their forest and they begin to put their roots back into the soil, and that's when they become sick again, right? Because it's the soil, where the disease is. And so you can heal one person or two or whatever. We can, you know, save some victims, stop some men from abusing, but we have a culture, right, that creates it, sustains it, and is sick, right? And Native Americans understand that, right?
Yeah.
That it's the community that has to change. And research actually bears that out, too.
And it's very hard to know that your situation is unhealthy if you don't have anything to compare it to,
right?
Because that's the water you're swimming in.
That's exactly right. It has become just normal, like the frog in boiling water, right?
Right.
Yeah. Just keep turning up the heat.
So if people want to support the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence, how do they do so?
They could do so by becoming a friend or a supporter. If they go to our website, nmcadv.org, we have information about how to do that. We'd love for people to make donations so that we can do more of these kinds of projects I just talked about with animals and with children and organizational development, messaging. All of these things require money that's hard to come by because we don't have the billionaire supporters, right, to give lots of money to these things. So we'll rely on, you know, the contributions of lots of people.
It's just about time to go. Anything that you want to let people know before we wrap up?
Well, I guess I'd like the people to know that, one, we're here. Lots of people don't know we exist. So we work with and represent about 30 domestic violence programs around the state to bring training and support and projects like we mentioned with animals and children and messaging. There's some work being done, lest people think that there isn't. I also want to thank CYFD again, and also Representative Stephanie Garcia-Richards and Senator Nancy Rodriguez for their bills in the Senate and the House, respectively, to help get some of these projects off the ground in this session. It was very, very important to us, and we appreciate it.
Pam Wiseman is Executive Director of the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence. They're on the web at nmcadv.org. I want to thank you so much for being with us in the Radio Cafe, and let's keep the conversation going.
Yes, thank you. I'd love to come back anytime.